Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
In our absorbing and never-ending examination of life, faith and culture on Open House, here's a bit of culture. I love a sunburnt country, a land of sweeping plains, of ragged mountain ranges, of drought and flooding rains. I love her far horizons, I love her jewel sea, her beauty and her terror, the wide brown land for me. Of course, Dorothea McKellar's famous poem. My next guest on Open House has seen more of that wide brown land than probably most of us, and has had an almost unique insight into the Australian character, well beyond the rush and crush of our cities and urban sprawl. Brian Roberts has been the National Director of Bush Church Aid Society for the past 18 years, and he's retiring after 32 years with an organisation that ministers to people in regional and remote Australia. Brian Roberts, welcome to Open House.
It's great to be here, Liam.
Terrific to see you. Thank you so much for coming in. And congratulations on such an enduring and important ministry, often where it's greatly needed. Give us a quick sketch of where you've been.
Camden, Zeehan on the west coast of Tasmania, a role looking after supporter relations in Queensland, from North Queensland right down to Victoria, then a short stint in a Sydney Anglican parish, and then to this role 18 years ago as the National Director of Bush Church Aid.
Where you cover everything.
Cover the lot.
Yeah. You've been everywhere, man. You've covered a generation or more in the bush that's been pretty challenging, drought, floods, more and more people leaving the bush for the city. We also have to say at the other end of the spectrum, the boom time for many mining communities, which I know BCA covers. And also, interestingly, the tree changes. So it's so much change has gone on in this era, hasn't it?
That's, I think, the mark of Australia. For the last 200 years, it's just been change after change. And the church in some places has kept up with it, in other places it hasn't. But the good thing is that for nearly all of that 200 years, Bush Church Aid in some way or another has tried to reach people who are outside the reach of the church, and that's been my role in this last 20 or 30 years to enable that to happen.
I'm interested in exploring with you, on the back of that vast experience, how you view the Australian character. How would you define some of the characteristics that make up the true Aussie character and spirit?
Well, yes, how long is a piece of string? a most difficult sort of task to put it into a few sentences. Obviously, resilience, mateship, that ability to make something out of nothing goes a long way and is very much evident in any description of what goes to make up an Australian person.
Yes.
But I think it's captured in the Anzac tradition that's recently been sort of celebrated, you know, that mateship, laying down one's life for another. That's all very important, but it still sort of lacks something. I think of a farmer that I know that he's standing there with a clergyman at the gate, and the clergyman knows he's got nothing more to offer other than to say, "I'll pray for you." Hmm. He knows the farmer's been through 5, 6, 7 years of just terrible seasons. And the farmer knows that the prayer's probably not worth much because, well, 5, 6, 7 years, no answer. It's a pretty hollow sort of, "I'll pray for you." And yet the clergyman says, "That's what I'll do for you."
And yet it has such potential.
It has,
and means so much.
Tremendous potential.
And can mean so much.
Yeah. So, I mean, in this last decade, we've focused a lot on physical, spiritual, mental well-being at BCA, trying to reach these fellows, these families, who are quite desperate to know where the future lies and to bring them some hope. Mm. And so we've been equipping clergy, the clergy we send and other clergy, to try and just give them an in, so that hollow ring of "I'll pray for you" has more substance.
Yes.
And so we've been training our fellows and our girls to...
Are the people that you encounter in the bush in regional and rural areas, How different are they from the city people, would you say, in your observation?
They're different. They're obviously different. You know, you can say they're laid back, you say they're resourceful, they don't have to rely on others. They can do it themselves.
Often need to.
Mm. And that's correct. And yet, really, the reverse is the case. All my farming friends rely on their neighbours just to do the general things. You know, I know farmers up in Lightning Ridge after that terrible sort of drought 8-10 years ago, they went on watch to watch their neighbours, and that was looking after their mates. So I think that is the core part of it. That is part of why they are different. It's hard to do that in the city with gated communities and units. Yes. and the impersonal sort of nature of transport.
Yes.
It's very hard to get that. So I think that's where the difference lies.
Are there people you can think of across the vast numbers of people you've encountered in so many contexts who fit into that classic Aussie character? When you kind of define that, who are the kind of people you're thinking of?
I'm really thinking of a lady who lived for a time in Tipperborough because her husband got a job up that way. And she had a couple of kids. And she was sort of a city girl. She'd been brought up, she'd gone to Sunday school, youth group. And then just, she got married and it all slipped away. She was quite an urban lass. And her husband, through his employment, took her to Tipperborough. And there she had this space, this openness, the backside of the desert, so to speak.
Yes.
Too much time, yes. Plenty to think about. Mm. And she started to think about life. And then suddenly a BCA fellow, Don was his name, came along. And Don just had a chat with her and said, as he was leaving, he just said, "I'll leave something." And he pulled out of his pocket a little sort of like a business card that he'd typed up before his long 10-day trip. And this time it was a passage of scripture from John 20:31. That passage, you know, where Jesus said, John, the gospel writer, said, Jesus did many more miracles, but these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ and in him have life. And he just left it with her and said, "Think about that." And he drove off. She was in contact and said, "Hey, this is where I want to be." Mm. This episode in my life, in this place of vast emptiness, has given me the time to know what I'm missing, that treasure that was stored into me by Sunday school teachers.
So many years ago,
yeah.
Anyone else? Who else would you think when I say, okay, encapsulate for me in the real life of a person, what life is like out there?
He's dead now, the fellow. Jeff is his name. He was probably the first fellow that I buried when I was the minister on the west coast of Tasmania. He was a technical assistant. He worked at the mine underground on heavy machinery. His wife was a Christian girl. They had two or three kids. And they came along to things that we put on at the church, family nights, you know, movie things and all that. And Jeff always came. He was conspicuous. He stood at the edge. He was big. He had a bushy beard. He didn't speak much. It was really, you know, it was hard to get to know him. He could talk fishing and shooting, but that was about it, you know. Anyhow, I drew alongside of him, and his wife encouraged me because she knew he really needed to know Jesus. And she always encouraged him to come. Anyhow, after about a year, he sidled up to me at one of these functions, and he said, "How do you say grace?" Mm. And I said, "You mean at the meal?" He said, "Yeah, I want to say grace with my kids before they eat." And so I gave him a short course in saying grace. And he went home. That was all I heard. The next thing was a call from his wife saying he'd been killed underground, not a week later.
Wow.
And it was sort of, it was numbing.
I'm sure.
This fellow with such, you know, such a great family. And
how old was he?
Oh, probably in his mid-30s. Mm. And anyhow, I went round and sat with his wife, and because I sort of thought, oh, I don't know if he's a Christian, you know, what am I going to say at the funeral? And she said, "Oh, Brian, I take such comfort. You know, on Monday night and every night this week, he said grace with the kids."
Wow.
And she just sort of grabbed hold of that.
I feel tears welling up in my eyes. Mm. So how does God fit into the lives of people in the bush? There's this kind of maybe myth that, oh, they're more traditional and they're more likely to go to church than people in the city would. Is that true?
No, they don't go to church more often. They go for official functions, funerals. Yes. They all turn out, and a lot of people live on their school religious experience, and so I had enough, and that's pretty empty. I think you've got to make the distinction between religion and faith and belief. Those that believe can be quite self-contained without church. Because they read the Bible, they do pray, and they don't rely on a minister to come and sustain. When the minister comes, when church is on, when someone, a group of Christians sort of gather, that's the icing on the cake. Mm. And so there is a large number of Christian people dotted right through the communities of country, rural, remote Australia, and they're gems. And it is through them that I think that the message of Christ's salvation, that Easter message of a risen Lord given to us by God, giving us the hope, giving us the life, will move across the networks that they've formed.
And yet a challenging job, I imagine, and a challenging ministry in the bush where there are not a lot of numbers, perhaps, or runs on the board to justify the no doubt considerable resources it takes to sustain ministry in the bush.
Mm. Yeah, BCA for a long time has sort of had, you know, fewest number at greatest distance as sort of a bit of a,
yes.
a tag.
I can imagine.
Worked it. Now, you've got to weigh up the resource management. And if someone gives you a dollar and says, I want you to tell people about Jesus in the bush, you've got to work out how to best spend that.
Yes.
And sometimes just trying to run a little congregation with 10 or 15 people and keep the lights switched on is not the most effective way of doing it. Mm. But they still need to hear. And so a lot of our energy is put into just spending time with individuals, encouraging them and giving them the way to do it themselves, for themselves. That's how it is on farm. That's how it is in their own, the rest of their life, 24/7.
I'm sure that's what Jesus would do, actually. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the future of regional, rural and outback communities?
I think it's very bright.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, from a population perspective, this tree change you mentioned earlier has given a wave of expertise, a wave of knowledge, a wave of people who have enjoyed the riches of urban life, have enjoyed church every Sunday, a good Bible teaching, are well equipped as Christian people, and have, for whatever reason, the coast is too expensive or whatever it is, have decided for tree change. And so I've moved out in the country areas. And that's been matched with some sort of government initiatives to build more regional infrastructure. It makes life easier. And so I think there are a greater number of people that are this new wave. It's a new wave of energy, of enthusiasm and of vision. And at the same time, the really remote sort of areas have depopulated. So it's sort of been a coming together. Those yes. that were a long way out have come in a bit. Those that were in the urban areas have gone out a bit. So I think there's a real, for that band between the two extremes, I'm very optimistic.
That's great.
There'll be a great Christian ministry go on over the next decades.
I want to ask you two quick questions to wrap up. Of all the places that you've seen, what's your favourite spot? And now you're retiring, where on earth do you go?
Well, I think a favourite spot is still the west coast of Tasmania, okay. where I went in my first sort of mission placement.
Yes.
Wild, wet, rugged, all that sort of stuff. Where do I go now? We've got a bit of a bolt hole down south in the Snowy Mountains. It's great to retreat to. But as soon as I've recharged the batteries, I think the place that I really want to be is talking to other people. okay. talking about Jesus, talking about where their life is, asking them, what have you done with God in the last 5 years? You know,
yeah.
how's God with you today? Hmm. Type questions. They're the questions I like asking. So I'm not going to retire, really. I've taken a little...
You really do.
The Bishop of Canberra, Goulburn, Stuart Robinson, has invited me to go to Bungendore.
Yes, it's outside of Canberra.
Yeah, tree change area.
Nice.
Needs a bit of a ramp up, needs some energy, needs some vision. And I said I'll give him 3 years to see if we can lay some foundations for the future there.
I'm sure you'll bring great energy and great insight into life and faith and the Aussie character. It's been a great pleasure to speak with you, Brian. And
thank you very
congratulations
much.
Congratulations on your very successful and significant ministry. I wish you all the best in your kind of retirement.
Yes, it's a slow retirement. Thank you very much.
Across Australia, you're with Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.